Price, Colgate Tooth Powder and Halo Shampoo bring you Paramount star of Lost Weekend in The Uninvited, Dorothy McCardle's intriguing story of ghosts and romance. And so to you, Colgate Tooth Powder and Halo Shampoo, comes our play, The Uninvited, and our star, Ray Milland.
Stood proud and beautiful on the edge of a Devon cliff looking out to sea. And my sister Pamela and I knew the moment we saw it that there was the home for us, if we could afford it. Oh, we heard the stories they told about it in the village, but there are ghost stories about every old house, particularly along those sea coasts where the fog comes in like a wraith at nightfall, and winds and waves whisper and sigh through long midnights. Ghosts? We weren't going to be taken in by old wives' tales. That's what we thought.
The house at Cliff End belongs to my granddaughter, Mr. Fitzgerald. You can buy it for £1,000.
£1,000? You'd sell that house for £1,000?
Yes. It's been difficult to find a purchaser because of the unpleasant stories that have circulated about it. If they don't worry you, I'll have the papers drawn up at once.
Commander, you've made a sale. And so it was ours. Ours, the stately entrance, the gracious living room, the intimate, warm little room next to it that had once been the nursery, the mellowed old library, the sweeping staircase that led up to bedrooms that looked out to sea. My sister and I had a glorious month, scrubbing and painting and furnishing. We were much too tired at night to shy at noises or even think of ghosts. As a matter of fact, I found most of my thoughts haunted by a very real, very much alive young person, the commander's granddaughter, Stella. It's hard to put Stella into words. It's almost impossible to group words together and say that Stella's eyes are like this, and this is Stella's smile and Stella's hair. I can only say that she was young and that she was lovely. And that she was like the music you feel inside when you're very happy or very sad.
You're very quiet, Roddy. What are you thinking about?
You? How long have we known each other, Stella?
About a month. Why?
Oh, no particular reason. I was just thinking that it seems as though I've known you all my life.
I know. I feel that way, too.
Stella, there's something I've been wanting to ask you. Why does your grandfather dislike me?
Oh, he doesn't. I'm sure he doesn't.
Well, he won't let you come to our house. And every time I meet you, I have the feeling that you're frightened to death that he'll see you with me.
It's not you. It's the house. I'm afraid it holds very bitter memories for him. He says when he carried me out of the nursery 17 years ago, he vowed that neither he or I would ever cross the threshold again.
But that doesn't seem fair.
He says it's morbid of me to want to go there. Roddy, do you believe that people come back after...
No, I don't think so. And yet, there are so many stories, you can't really know. I do believe this, that if spirits do walk, it's in the places they've loved. Why do you ask?
You see, I believe the same thing you do. Roddy, my mother was very happy at Cliff End. That's why I must visit it. With Grandfather's permission, or without it.
I fell asleep with Stella's words ringing in my ears. I awoke hours later. I thought it was a sound that had aroused me. But a heavy silence shrouded the house. I got up and listened a moment beside Pamela's door, and then outside our housekeeper's door. But there was no sound anywhere. And then I began to hear something. I didn't turn on the light. I leaned over the banister looking down.
And gradually I became aware of a light that shone very faintly through the half-open door of the nursery. A pale, pulsating gleam. It wasn't moonlight, it moved. And then, abruptly, light and sound were gone. And an overwhelming sense of terror told me that someone out of the world of the dead was moving about the house. A cold chill stabbed through me. And I saw. I saw the half-materialized figure of a woman moving towards me up the stairs. Somehow I managed to turn, managed to grope my way back to my room. I huddled under the blankets, clammy with fear, staring at my door, expecting anything. But nothing happened. And gradually the feeling passed, and a deep peace descended upon the house. And I fell asleep, smelling the strong scent of mimosa, and wondering where it came from.
Father Anson, you've had the village parish a good many years. I wonder if you could tell me, without divulging any confidences, of course, what you know about the Meredith house at Cliff End.
What exactly would you like to know?
How did Stella's mother die?
She fell from the cliff by the house. The nurse that was helping the Meredith said the girl, Carmel, was running for the cliff and that Mary was running after her, trying to stop her.
Who was Carmel?
A Spanish girl that Mr. Meredith was using for a model. He was quite an artist, you know. Anyhow, the story goes that the strong gale forced Carmel back against the tree that grows on the edge of the cliff. You know the one.
Yes, there's only one tree on the edge.
But Mary couldn't stop herself. It's quite steep there. She tried to grasp at the tree, but she went over. They found her at the bottom of the cliff. Her back was broken.
And the other girl, Carmel?
She died a week later from pneumonia. It was a terrible tragedy. Stella's father packed up and went off, and about 3 years later the news came back that he had drowned at sea.
Good heavens.
You see, Carmel was Meredith's model at the time he and Mary were married. Mary insisted on bringing the girl back here with them. She always loved to do a generous thing.
Had he been in love with Carmel?
Meredith was hardly the sort to confide in a priest. Well, they were here about 6 months. Then in the winter, all three of them went abroad. In the spring, Meredith and Mary returned with their baby, who had been born in France.
And what happened to Carmel?
Mary found a position for her in Paris. She remained there about 2 years, and then she came back, ill and in rags, and Mary took her in. I'm afraid that's all I can tell you. You already know the ending.
No, I don't know the ending. Not yet. There are still some questions to be answered.
What kind of questions?
Why Mary Meredith cries at night in the nursery? Why she carries a lighted candle there?
You must not ask me to believe that the spirit of Mary Meredith is not at rest.
Well, I do ask you to believe it.
Mary never cried. She prided herself on it. And she never permitted any sort of light in Stella's nursery. Stella was afraid of the dark, but her mother felt she should overcome it.
Father Anson, there's just one more question I'd like to ask you. Stella told me her father wrote her once that her mother loved mimosa and used the scent constantly.
Mary? Mimosa? I've heard Mary say a dozen times that she never used scent in her life.
Strange. I caught the fragrance quite strongly last night. No one in the house used it.
I didn't say that. As a matter of fact, Carmel used it almost constantly.
I was suddenly afraid for Stella. Afraid that a woman already dead, who had hated her mother, might find a way to destroy her too. But I couldn't explain this. And I couldn't close the door to her one night when she came to the house. And later, sitting in the firelight with Pamela and Stella, my fears gradually began to seem very foolish. And I half decided that I'd been the victim of my own imagination.
Roddy, I really must go. It's almost 11.
All right, I'll get the car out.
I'll go with you and hold the flashlight while you back the car out. Excuse us, Stella.
Of course.
We were almost to the garage when we heard Stella scream. We ran back to the house through a thick, cottony silence. The coldness of the nursery hit us like a physical blow. Stella was lying on the floor, her breathing so faint that for a moment I thought she wasn't breathing at all. I rubbed her hands frantically. For long, agonizing moments, there was no sign of recovery. And then gradually her breathing deepened, and her lips began to have color in them again. She opened her eyes, and I felt as though my own spirit had fled to the edge of death and come home again.
What is it? What's wrong?
Nothing, darling. You fainted, that's all. Lie still now.
I was so frightened. And I didn't want to be frightened. I wanted to tell her how much I loved her. But I was frightened.
Frightened of what, Stella?
Of my mother. I saw her in the doorway. Her eyes were blue and blazing. And she raised her arm as though she were going to strike me.
Strike you?
She looked at me as though she hated me. Oh, but that couldn't be true. She couldn't hate me. Not my mother.
That wasn't your mother, Stella. It was Carmel. It wasn't your mother.
Oh, but it was, Ronnie. I have a great many pictures of my mother, you know. I recognized her almost immediately.
Roddy, we've got to get her out of here. It's so cold.
Yes. Come on, Stella. We'll take you home, and you must never come here again.
I've got to come back, Roddy. Next time, I won't fail her.
There isn't going to be a next time. Is that clear, Stella? You're never coming here again. And if ever I learn the secrets of this house, I'll come to you and I'll tell you. Perhaps we'll learn. We can't fight the uninvited.
Colgate Tooth Powder and Halo Shampoo bring you the second act of The Uninvited, starring Ray Milland.
Neither Pamela or I saw Stella for weeks. We learned from the village doctor that she'd been ill. Once I called the commander, but he would give no word of her. And in our strange house, a sense of brooding and unrest grew. One night when I was asleep, I heard Pamela hysterically screaming.
Roddy, where are you? Roddy!
I ran down the stairs. I found Pamela in the nursery, gray-faced and shaking.
There was a sort of cloud, Roddy. I saw it come in the door. It sort of floated in without taking shape. I don't know exactly how to describe it, but the room was full of a lovely sort of tranquility. It was warm and full of the scent of mimosa. I saw the soft glimmer of light, and I heard a woman whispering. Then the light went out and a low moaning began. It didn't frighten me at all, and I was trying to make up my mind to say something, but suddenly everything changed. There was that terrible cold, and I saw the shape coming in the door. I had a terrible feeling if you didn't come fast, I was going to run right over the cliff myself.
Pamela, shall we give up the house?
Do you want to?
It's up to you.
Oh, I don't want to give it up. I want to find out what's wrong here. Roddy, I think there are two ghosts.
Two ghosts? You may be right. Mary, who sighs and weeps, suffers a nightmare of misery in the nursery and comforts her daughter and gives her a light. And there's the other.
Yes, there's the other.
Terrifying, unmerciful, cold. Yes, one who wants to protect, and one who wants to kill. I felt that both Pamela and I needed a bit of a recreation. So the next day we drove to Bristol to have dinner and see a play. But soon, a desperate uneasiness began to torment me. Pamela, I've got a terrible feeling that Stella's in some sort of danger. We must go. I seldom drive recklessly, but that night I drove like a madman. It seemed years, eternities, that last there was the house, square set and steadfast. There was the tree lashing in the wind on the cliff's edge. The bay window of the nursery lit up in a blue blaze of light.
and then its windows burst open, and someone ran out, ran frantically, straight for the edge. Stella! Stella! If it hadn't been for the tree, I could never have saved her. She caught it and clung to it and swung like a child at play over the brink. I flung myself against the trunk, got a good grip on a bough, and was able to reach her and bring her to safety.
Sorry, Roddy. So sorry. You might have been killed.
Just relax, darling. I'm all right, and so are you.
There's something I've got to tell you. Roddy, you were right. It was not my mother in the nursery.
Why do you say that, Stella?
That night, when I was here before the cold came, there was such a lovely warmth, and I could smell mimosa and hear someone saying lovely little words. I told my grandfather about it. I hoped he might be glad. But he was angrier than I'd ever seen him. He told me I imagined the whole thing because it seems my mother was not that sort of person. He said she was not sentimental about me. She was never a baby worshiper.
I sat there a moment looking at Stella, and then suddenly I knew. Suddenly the whole thing fell into a pattern. I only had to go to the phone to get Father Anson and to ask one question. Father Anson, did Carmel ever have a child? And then I could answer Stella. Darling, your mother did love you. She adored you. She sang to you and she stole into your room at night with a light. No baby was ever more loved. You see, everyone has made an extraordinary mistake. You're not Mary Meredith's child. I watched Stella anxiously, wondering how she would react to this. And then she smiled and my heart lifted.
You know, I've wondered so many times why I'm so unlike her. Oh, I've almost loved and hated her at the same time. Oh, Roddy, I feel as though suddenly I were free.
And you are, darling. You're free of Mary.
Roddy!
A sudden cold made me gasp. We were standing in the hall. I pushed Pamela and Stella into the library and switched off the light, plunging the room into blackness. I wanted to see Mary. I forced my way against an invisible pressure to the foot of the stairs and looked at her. She stood, taller than I'd seen her before, expanding and gathering form. She began to float down towards me. I stood on the second step, gripping the rail to keep myself from falling. And then suddenly I laughed. I laughed because it was so incongruous. The awe and terror which had surrounded the ghost of Carmel and the harmless innocence of her spirit. Mary was laughable. What had she ever known of the joy and the reckless valor of love? Mary only knew how to hate and how to punish. She'd wanted to be remembered as a saint betrayed by sinners, had she? You hear that, Mary? I'm laughing at you. You're showing up. Your memory and your poses are done with, you shallow fraud. She loomed above me, wavering. And step by step, I mounted up against her. You tried to kill Carmel the night you chased her to the cliff, but you were fooled, weren't you? I just had the most horrible thought. Mary Meredith might have been my mother-in-law.
Ray Milland, star of Gene Holloway's adaptation of The Uninvited, tonight's presentation of the Colgate Tooth Powder and Halo Shampoo Theater of Romance, will return to our microphone in just a moment.
Halo, everybody, halo. Halo is the shampoo that glorifies your hair, so halo, everybody, halo.
Use Halo Shampoo if you want that. Remember,
So halo, everybody, halo. Halo, shampoo, halo.
For his appearance in tonight's Theater of Romance, Colgate Tooth Powder and Halo Shampoo express their thanks to Ray Milland, who will soon be seen in the Paramount picture, Kitty. Ray, the uninvited certainly didn't apply to you. It was great to have you here.
Well, thank you, Frank, and I was glad to be here. Incidentally, regular listeners to Theater of Romance will hear an awfully good show next Tuesday night. Your double sponsors, Colgate Tooth Powder and Halo Shampoo, have a double treat. It's Robert Young and Herbert Marshall in one of the best romantic stories of the war, The Enchanted Cottage. So good night and good listening.
The Colgate Tooth Powder and Halo Shampoo Bulletin for the Future. Next week, Charles Vander's production of Theater of Romance brings you to The Enchanted Cottage with two of Hollywood's most popular stars, Robert Young and Herbert Marshall. Enchanted Cottage will be followed by James Hilton's magnificent story, Random Harvest, starring one of America's leading actors, Donna Amici. Keep a date with Theater of Romance for all the weeks to come. You'll always hear your favorite stars. These presentations of Theater of Romance come to you because of your enthusiastic recognition of Colgate Tooth Powder for a breath that's sweet.
And Halo Shampoo to glorify your hair.
This is your host, Frank Graham, saying good night and wishing you love, happiness, and romance.
This is America. Here is a message from Secretary of Agriculture Anderson. He says even though meat rationing has ended, there still remains the need for salvaging all used fats. Yes, ladies, there is still a shortage of fat for industry. And one result of this shortage is a scarcity of soap. If you want to see a plentiful supply of soap in the stores, do save and sell all the fats you possibly can. Just remember, where there's fat, there's soap. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
We hope that you've enjoyed this recording. And for more happy listening, please visit otrcat.com.